Är det lyd i streamingen? Bra. Good morning if you follow the stream. First time I do streaming and Blackboard and everything all at once, so give me a few minutes and I see that we have everything ready. I have opened a room in Blackboard. I see that we have two people that have signed in there. I hope you can follow the stream as well and see the presentation there. All right. Ja, gjør gjerne. Er det dere som er logget inn på Blackboard, eller? Nei. Nei, ok. Let's see. Share files. Document. Okay, I think we're ready to start soon. I'm trying to share the introduction, the presentation on Blackboard as well. Okay. Good morning. I think we'll start. Good morning and welcome to IMT 4116, Reverse Engineering and Malware Analysis. A new course and a new teacher. This is the first time I teach at NTNU. So all the technical stuff is a little bit new to me, so I'll try to do as best as I can. Hopefully now the stream is working and this should be recorded as well, so you can look at it later, hopefully. For those of you on Blackboard, I'm showing the presentation there just as a tryout. I'll see if I continue with that, but I'm definitely continuing with the streaming and the recording. So then I need to change the slides onto machines at the same time. I'll see how that goes. That could be multitasking. Okay, my name is Geir-Ola Dyrkelbotn. My background is from NTNU a long time ago. I have a degree in electrical engineering and computer science. Then I moved on and took my PhD here at Gjøvik before they merged with NTNU. Topic was side channel attacks, for those that are familiar with that. Throughout my whole career, I've been employed by the Norwegian Armed Forces, working with tactical communication equipment, security, and lately computer network defense with the unit that the cyber defense has for protecting their networks, with a special focus on emission security. And if you're very observant, you see that there is no malware in there. But as the head of the computer network defense unit for 2 years, I worked closely with the people that did malware analysis. And I think my strength of what I can bring to this course is seeing the malware analysis in a bigger picture. And that's where I'm going to try to push you to, even though this is a course in doing reverse engineering and malware analysis. I'd like to, for me, that's not meaningful unless we use it for something useful. And that's where I hope I can contribute very well. I started as an associate professor at NTNU and CCIS, Center for Cyber Information Security, in 2015. And since then, I've been the head of a research group on cyber defense. I run a malware lab in collaboration with Katrin Franke, for those who know her. And I supervise students on all levels. And I'm also track champion or responsible for one of the experience-based master tracks, cyber operations. And right now, I'm teaching this class. Very excited about that. I also have a teaching assistant that will, from next Monday, be available. Sergei Banin, he's a PhD candidate from Ukraine. I'll fill in the contact details when he's back, but he's still on Christmas break and arrives this week. But the hope is that he will help and assist during the labs and the more technical computer issues. That was the idea. I've stolen some slides from Patrick, as you saw on the first slide. So some of you might have seen this before. The teaching assistant and myself, we're here to help you. So please ask. Sooner than later is better. This first hour, I'm going to introduce the class and just what this class is about before I do a different presentation the next lecture. But hopefully this course will give you both the theoretical and the practical knowledge to do reverse engineering and malware analysis. This is a practical course. A lot of the knowledge you will gain by being hands-on, working with malware, analyzing. And that's why we have two lab hours following this class. This course is mandatory for those that take cyber operations and corporate forensics under the experience-based master. And then it's an elective for one more track there and for the regular master in information security. Not sure if it's open for all students at NTNU yet, but we'll find out as we go. Short overview over the topics that I plan to cover. Some malware methodology. We'll cover some basic analysis, advanced static analysis, advanced dynamic. Then we look at how we can do anonymous and stealthy analysis if we don't want to reveal that we're on somebody's tail. Malware classification and functionality. Then it's how do the malware writers try to make our day hard with anti-reverse engineering techniques. And all this is combined with Malware Lab and a couple of workshops. We'll go into more details a little bit later. Since this is part of the this course is made for especially for the students at the cyber operation, I'd like to mention or read this to you, that the purpose of the cyber operation track is to contribute to the protection of the welfare of society, organizations and individuals, and by increasing the knowledge on how to handle the ever-increasing threat from the cyber domain that I'm sure all of you are familiar with. But handling cyber attacks, the goal here is to try to reduce the consequence and the impact of the attack. And that requires, so we're not only focused on the technical analysis, like I stated in the beginning of the lecture. The technical analysis that this course will be heavy on is important, but if we can't turn that technical information into something useful for the company, it's a waste of time. So we believe that this, we therefore have to combine the technical analysis with the context information. And for those of you that work in a company or an organization, then knowing what is important for your company is really valuable, even when you do reverse engineering. So the how will we do this? We we're here Monday from 8:15 to 10. I'm glad to see that there's a couple of students in the classroom, even though it's early, and I don't know how many are following the stream live or how many wait for the recording, but I'll be here every Monday, or most Mondays at least, from 8:15 till 10. Directly following this, from 10 till 10:15 to 12, there will be labs. And we will do this, I think we have 15 weeks this semester. I'm not sure if we need all of them. We might need more, for all I know. We don't get that, but I'm estimating between 13 and 15 weeks. And since this is the first time I teach, then I don't know how long this will take, so we'll adjust as we go. The lectures will be recorded and streamed using the solution from Old Higg. But I also like to encourage participation in the classroom, showing up here. I know that's not possible for many of you, but then hopefully the Collaborate in Blackboard will give you an opportunity to stop me, ask questions. I've been this is new to me, but I've been told that if one of you click the button and raise your hands, then I'll see that, then I can read the questions for everybody. The labs will not be recorded because the labs is your opportunity to work on exercises. I'll point you to them later. And then recording me sitting here waiting for questions is not very useful. But I will be available, and also the teaching assistant, in the classroom here and in Blackboard. That's how we start. And then I would like feedbacks on how things work. So what's the curriculum for the class? All lectures and material will be put up in Blackboard under the room IMT4116. And that's also what I try to do. We'll try to distribute as much information as possible. The NTNU is encouraging us to use Blackboard. And now we've got a question from, see if I can answer that. Somebody's asked if the microphone was on. For listening.atig works. Okay. Then I'll, okay. Let me stop and answer this, because if not, then let's see. Please follow lecture at All right. Hopefully we'll catch people there. All right, so some people are following on Blackboard and can hear me there, so that's understandable since I'm not recording there or streaming there. Hopefully we'll get everybody over to full listening at hig.no, and that works, right? Yeah, the feed. Good. Then I'll continue, and for those that missed a little bit, please go back and check the recording. So everything, Blackboard will be my communication channel. The book that you should purchase is Practical Malware Analysis, Hands-On Guide to Dissecting Malicious Software by Sikorsky and Honig. Highly recommended book from many skilled malware analysts. A great book to start with. So I hope they're right. At least they helped me a lot. we will go through this book chapter by chapter in this class. So planned there we go. So the planned course content, we're now in week 2 with what we're going to do, an introduction, and the lab today is setting up your computer or the lab environment. Continue on the information that I put out on Blackboard. Hopefully it works. If not, we'll try to handle any issues today, or at least I'll bring them with me and fix them as soon as I can. And then I've tried to map out the topics from the book as best as I can. We're going through basic analysis, both static and dynamic, the next 2 weeks. Then we move to advanced static analysis. That will involve a crash course in microprocessors and assembly code, using IDAPRO, recognizing C code and Windows constructions in assembly. Might be tough for some, but I'll try to guide you through that. Then we hit our first workshop in week 7, or it might be week 8, but I'm planning 2 workshops. And NullCert has agreed to do one of them, and they will come here and talk about a real malware incident that they have had. I've asked them to go through the analysis, how they think, and how they end up with a report. And then that's also where you get your first assignment. Because then I'm hoping that we can get either the same sample or a similar sample and give it to you, and have you try to analyze and write a report similar to what NullCert expects, or what I expect, and hand that in. And I'll come to what I expect on assignments in a little bit. Then we move on with the advanced dynamic analysis, debugging, anonymous and stealthy analysis, classification, and the topics that I mentioned earlier. And then we have a second workshop right before Easter. I don't have. I'm talking to Telenor. Let's see if they want to take that. If not, we'll find somebody else to fill workshop 2. But the idea is the same, that you get a malware sample from the wild, and first you get to see how it's done, and then you get to do that yourself. And then some topics, I've written packers, unpacking, and shellcode analysis. We'll see how far in the book we get. Maybe some repetition, but week 20, that's the week of 17th of May. I've been told that that's the absolute last week of lectures. And then exams will be the following weeks. And I'll talk more about that also. Grading. You've seen this from Patrick, I hope. This is not how I grade, but I found it funny anyway. So how, what do I, students are usually concerned about, how do I get a good grade, or how do I pass the class? So I have to address that right away. Grading in this class is based on two assignments associated with the workshops. That is just a pass and fail. So you hand it in to me, I see that you've done enough, and you get the thumbs up or thumbs down, hopefully thumbs up. Then in week 21 to 24, when it's exam, you will be given a 72-hour home exam. The idea then is to give you one or several malware samples, and not decided yet whether it's going to be write a report, let you loose on that, or if I'm going to say, explain what this code is doing at address location so-and-so. That could be a question. Or find where in the code this functionality takes place. That's, I guess that's typical questions that I foresee. 72 hours home exam, that's an estimate. We'll see how that goes. But then you turn that in as a written report or paper to me, and I grade it. And then we have a one-hour oral exam, which starts with you presenting what you did in those 72 hours. And I get to ask follow-up questions, and basically, and that can adjust the grade up and down. And basically, that is to see that you actually did this yourself, that I can clear things that were unclear in the report, and check that you guys don't copy each other. Of course, you have the opportunity to do that. You have the opportunity to go on the internet and find things, and but then you don't learn much. So that's up to you. Yeah, this is also from Patrick. Will this be on the test? It can be. This is what he wrote. And then I added one sentence myself at the bottom there. Everything I said and should have said. Just to make it easy for me and difficult for you guys. Well, this is pretty normal, I think. Yeah, contact me. I just copied that slide. Thought it was funny. I'm trying to pay attention to Blackboard here. I don't see any raised hands anymore there. And in the classroom, that's not a problem. In the lab, I will pay attention to Blackboard. Outside Monday from 8 to 12, we can set up a session in Blackboard if you need. I'm available on Skype, but I would prefer if you contact me on email first to set up a time. Blackboard will be the main communication channel. If you haven't been in there, I hope everybody's been in there, because if not, you didn't know about this class. But there's an app. I was told to tell you that there's an app for your cell phone. If you don't know about that, then I'll find the information and give it to you. But there's supposed to be an app so you can get this, so you'd never get time off school. So, but I will put the course content out there, the slides and information per topic. The ones that I'm lecturing right now is not out there, but I'll do that as soon as this lecture is over, and I'll try to have them ready before I start lecturing next time, so that you can, if you want to, flip through yourself. I'm going to use Collaborate, and that room will be active, like it says here, from 8 till 12 on Mondays. Then I also created a chat room. I call it Malware Forum. That is to encourage you to talk together outside the class. I think I have that point later too, but I briefly mention it, that it's important that you share your experience. Some of you will know certain topics much better than me, and much better than all the other students. And then next topic, it might be me that knows more. Next topic, it might be somebody else. Share and learn from each other. I think that's really important. Yeah, like I said, here's Skype upon request, and email outside lectures and labs. I don't see any hands in Blackboard, so then I hopefully people found the stream. I have some expectations, and I'm sure you do too. Please, if everybody was in the classroom, I could ask what your expectations are, but let me know if you if there's something that I expectation that I don't meet. But my role, the way I see it, is that I create the learning opportunity for you. And like I said, my background is not in malware analysis. I have some courses. I've worked some with malware analysis, enough to teach this course, I think. But I have experience in uses of malware analysis for organizations. So I do not have all the answers, but I will do my best together with the teaching assistant to find or help you find the answers. But it's up to you whether you want to take this opportunity or not. I'm not going to run after you and force you to show up, force you to do things. This is, you guys are, yeah, old and mature enough to take responsibility for your own learning. So if I don't create the learning opportunity, let me know. And if you don't take the learning opportunities, not my problem. You lose the chance. Active participation in the class, in lectures, in labs, after class will always increase your output. Ask questions, and like I said, the initiative is yours. And feedbacks, please. You are my guinea pigs. This is the first time I teach. It's the first time I teach. This class has been being taught. So Blackboard is new for NTNU. I'm not used to this streaming and recording. I'm not used to having, I've been teaching before, but not with, then I had all the students in the classroom. So a lot of things are new to me. So improvements, things that don't go well, let me know right away, please. So I'm really looking forward to this. I hope you do too. That's not what I meant to do. Some expectations, like I talked about already, malware analysis is about working together, sharing information and experience. I facilitate this here and now and in the labs through the Collaborate in Blackboard and also through the Malware Forum. And also, if you contact me on email, I'll do my best. But like I touched earlier, you have experience that I don't have. Some of you have experience that your peers do not have. So I encourage you and challenge you to think outside the box and see how can we do this, how can we facilitate this learning process better, both during the course, but if some of you are going to work with malware analysis after the course, how do you keep this community or sharing of information after the course? I have people that do this on Twitter or email groups. So there are probably many ways of doing it, but try to think how if you have a better or solution or solution you like to take initiative for. You see how I'm doing on time. Oh, we're fine. Some general comments. I will show a few ways to analyze. It's impossible to show them all. It is important that you try many different approaches because sometimes things will work and sometimes it doesn't. There is no tool that is optimal for every case. And what works for one malware sample won't work for the next. It could be that malware is written for a certain version of an operating system and only works for vulnerabilities for one particular app. We need to have multiple tools and try many different things. So again, I'm back to this, this try different approaches and share. If you find a smart way of doing things, don't keep it to yourself. Share it maybe on the malware forum that I created or whatever fancy solution you suggest yourself. All right. I have to talk two words about moral and ethics. Before I do, I'm going to ask the management at the faculty if I need you guys to sign anything to take this course. Sorry for being a little bit late about that. I don't know what the answer is. I know they do that in the ethical hacking class. The point here is that what you learn here can be used for good and evil. And then we need to have this talk about if you misuse that information. That's not something that the school and myself can be responsible for. That's something that's misuse that you do on your own. And I'm not sure what the school and the new requires of me as far as statements from you. But by saying this, at least I have informed you that, of course, like many other courses, this can be used for good and evil. Misuse can lead to criminal charges. And by following this course, you take full responsibility for your actions. Questions concerning that, please send me an email. But then I'll if you need to sign something, I'll post it on Blackboard and just ask for a signed copy back if that's necessary. I hope not, but never know. Labs and exercises. Be very careful. We will be handling live, real, malicious code that could do harm to your computer. With the virtual machine, the VMware, and the precautions that we take there, you should be fairly safe. It can never be 100%, but it is the best practice that people use. However, I would be hesitant to do this course if you have a company production computer or something that you connect inside your company's network when you go away from classes. That I would not recommend. I have a separate computer here for my malware analysis, and then I have this one that I use for all other things, but you might not have that opportunity, but it should be okay. There are a few examples of malware that can escape the VM, but as far as I know, we're not dealing with that in this course. Okay, so repeat a little bit of repetition here. The lab and exercises will be today, 10:15 to 12. Sergey is supposed to be here, at least later. Will be available on Blackboard. Labs are mainly found in the book. And when you purchase this, if you haven't already, each chapter or most chapters, they have three levels of exercises or labs: easy, medium, and challenging. What's great about this book is that there are solutions in the back. First a short solution and then a detailed solution. Really helpful. I don't know what you prefer. Some people prefer to jump to the detailed solution and just work through that, and that's how they learn the best. Others like to try on their own first. I don't know what suits you, but use this as a learning opportunity, not just to copy paste what is it's in the book. If you find, I know some of you have access to malware and work with protecting networks. So if you have malware that illustrates a topic that we're covering, and can please share if you can with your fellow students and me, so that we can have more examples for a specific topic. All right, we're getting to the end of the first lecture. This, I think, is part of something that I also posted on Blackboard, so you might have seen it before. I just want to say two words about the system requirements. You will need your own computer, preferably not the production computer from your organization. You don't need a super duper high-end computer. Most laptops, modern laptops, fairly new ones, will do the job fine. But you need some space on your hard drive so you can take frequent images of your virtual machine. That's helpful. And also, when you take an image or you analyze, if you have a fair amount of RAM and some processors on your computer, it will take less time. So it will just enhance your experience. So if you're going to do this later as a job, then I would recommend getting a tailored computer with some resources. But for this class, most computers will do the job. So it shouldn't be. I don't want to create a class where everybody has to buy a new computer. That would be good for the computer or Elkjøp. This you have seen. I'm just putting it up here to say that this list is what the lab today is about, getting this under control. So if you have this under control and know it's working, then just use the lab to familiarize yourself with the environment. I'm sorry about the VMware, that there was some mix-up there, but that link up there, you need a HIG student number that most of you don't have. And due to some license issues that I didn't quite understand, they haven't moved the license over to a new platform. So for now, the quick fix is for you guys to download the trial version. Then we have IT department have 30 days to fix this. And they have promised they will do that. So in 30 days, I'll be down there and yell at them if they don't. Then on Kepler, a database that we have, you will find the image that we will be using. There's some issues with the certificate. Don't worry about that. It never looks good in a security class to have security warnings, but I've been told that that's shouldn't be a problem. So download that, and then the rest of it, we need Remnux, a Linux-based reverse engineering platform. And I'll talk more about this next week, but we will use this so we can run the malware on the Windows platform and use the Remnux to simulate internet for the malware. If it needs resources from the internet, we don't want to go on the actual internet. We want to keep it safe on our computer. IDA Pro and Wireshark are licensed, so we can't download them for you. The free version should be fine. The professional version is really expensive, but if you're going to work with this, it is the de facto standard today for this. All right, this will cover more in the lab if there are questions. I've added this here, and I'll upload this after the class. Sergey gave me this late last night, that's why I didn't have time to upload it, but just be aware that most of the installed tools are found under the program files and not in the start menu or on your desktop. It could be... I would encourage you to make a shortcut on your desktop. It will make the analysis just go a little bit smoother later. And then there are some tips here about how to turn on and off the internet connection, because you need to go on the internet to download software, but you want to cut that and be sure that you're not connected to the internet when we do analysis. Then you want the internet to be towards the Remnux platform. All right. that was what I had planned to say as the introduction to this this course. We have 5 minutes until it's 9. I understand the lectures go from 4:15 till on the hour. And then 9:15, I will give a presentation that might seem a little bit, I'm not going to say not relevant, because I believe it's relevant, but it's not dead on malware analysis. It's on defensive cyber operations. And this is my attempt to give you, in the beginning of the course, give you an overview. Where does malware analysis fit in? What is the big picture where we actually need this? So that will happen 9:15. Any questions? No, that's a difficult one. It's streaming. And people that are seeing this recording, then send me an email. All right, then I'll continue here 9:15. Thank you. Okay. Does it work? Yep. På Blackboard? Nei, det har... oh, there was a question here if I'm sharing something on Black. Hello. And we're back. If I can get the lid on this too. There we go. Okay, there was a question about Blackboard. I think the last presentation told me that there were, we learned that as long as the stream is okay, then sharing my presentation on Blackboard at the same time is not necessary. If you disagree, then let me know. But I'll try an alternative now and only... do it there, and I also have some animation, so I can't use the Blackboard for that. All right, so let's start this presentation. This one that I've held a couple of times before in other forums. it's called Defensive Cyber Operations. If you find misspellings in here, please forgive me for that. It's a Norwegian presentation that I translated over the weekend, and spelling errors may occur. So the reason I'm holding this brief, if this is based on my old job in the Norwegian Armed Forces Cyber Defense, and I also work at the Norwegian Defense Cyber Academy. So this is talking about how the Norwegian Armed Forces deal with the cyber threat. But I think this is relevant for any organization to think along these lines, and I also think it's important for you in this class to anytime you work with malware analysis and reverse engineering, try to picture what is this going to be used for, what's the purpose, why am I doing this. So just when you're listening to me, see if you can spot tasks that you think a malware analyst needs to ask or answer. So I keep that in back of your mind. First thing I want to start with is two numbers. They're not correct. They're not accurate, but they're still two numbers that can illustrate a very important point. World Economic Forum estimates that increased digitalization in a country increases the GDP, gross domestic product, in the country. For Norway, this is estimated to 24 billion Norwegian kroner a year. So our society is using technology more and more, and this represents an increase in value, opportunities, job opportunities, increased welfare, you name it, in that region. Don't get stuck on the number, but there is a benefit for the society associated with the use of technology. The lower number is from Mørketalsundersøkelse, so looking into dark figures what we lose to cyber criminals. Again, that's not the correct number, and it's inaccurate, but it's still a number. The point here is that society also loses a huge amount of money to criminal activity in the cyber domain. That takes away the gain, the added welfare, the jobs that society normally would have. That's what these two numbers represent. This is what we would get in a perfect society, then the bad guys are taking away a lot, so we're stuck with less. Any job in cyber defense, working with incident response, SOCs, CERTS. In my opinion, the objective of that work is to maximize that gap. Protect this number, get this as the lower number as low as possible. That's easy to say and extremely difficult to do. Another thing that I think is important is that security for me is about protecting operations or protecting the business and the business goals. It's not about system and technology. If you think that security is about protecting one specific server or one specific PC, then I think we need to have a talk. Then I disagree. It's not relevant for Telenor what goes wrong on one of their servers. What's relevant for them is their customer relations, their reputation, the stock market. That's what's important. And we that work with technology need to be much better about translating our nerdy technical language into a language that the management of these companies, or for my part, the military leaders, understand, so they can do something about it. So what's this threat that we're talking about? This is a slide from EU CERT last year. This is how they this is an overview they make of their the threat the way they see it. They see cyber espionage on a strategic level, economic level. They see this used in cyber conflicts, state to states and regional conflicts, and also what they call hybrid warfare, where there's a cyber element with traditional military forces. In cybercrime, this is well known to probably what people hear most about, banking and ransomware and stealing money, collecting information, personal identifiable information. Then you have sectorial attacks. Cyber jihadism is actually one that is growing as an own area. On this conference, that was focused on a little bit. The status right then was that the cyber jihadism is, they're not technically advanced. They claim that they have hacked a web page or a server, and what they have actually gotten access to, in one example, was just a document that was open for everybody anyway. So that's one example of the level, the sophistication level. But what they are extremely good about is to use social media and to get their message across. Then we have hacktivism and cyber repression. This is one way of organizing it or mapping it. There's probably others, but this is how EU CERT saw it right before Christmas, September 2016. More into to the threat landscape. Again, EU CERT. These are the top threats, again, from that conference. If you skip the three first top ones, if you see ransomware is really high up now, and also banking Trojan, as we expect. And but these three, at least for me from a military background, is what's maybe more worrying. It's APT, Advanced Persistent Threat, fancy word for somebody that is skilled, can put a lot of resources into this and are persistent, that are not in for this in just a short term, but can really, really wait for their chance. So these advanced persistent threats, Turla, Sofasi, and Kichang, were on the top five in EU last year. Let's look at one of them. Sofasi. Again, from EU CERT, this is attributed to Russia. It has other names: Fancy Bear, APT28, Pornstorm, Zednit, SAR Team, and it targets government embassies, political parties, and so forth, and also targeting many EU member states, as you can see there. What's noteworthy here is to look at some of the campaigns. Some of them I don't know about, but I'm sure everybody's heard about the attack on the U.S. Democratic Party. And maybe you also heard about the attack on the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. The information that we got from EUCERT was that these campaigns are attributed back to Sofosy, which then is attributed back to Russia, so located in Russia. These are the kind of this attribution and these things that they find when they analyze these campaigns is what I'm guessing. This I don't know. I don't have the information, but this is what I'm guessing, and what's highly likely, that when United States accuse Russia for being behind this, then they have done this analysis. They have attributed it back to a known group with ties to Russia, and then they probably have some indications or information that links this group to the government, and that's when they can go out and do claim things like this. But we don't know. I know for a fact that media sometimes have a funny way of presenting information inaccurately themselves. But my point here is that what leads up to this newspaper heading is analyzing a campaign, and analyzing that campaign is made possible by malware analysis. They could not have reached this level without analyzing the malware itself. And that's the wrong computer. So, defensive cyber operation. How do we and the Norwegian Armed Forces meet this threat? Just a repetition here: defending operations, not not equipment. It's not about fixing the computer. Same thing said in a different way. For the Norwegian cyber defense, this defensive cyber operation is a military operation to deal with an adversary. There's somebody on the other side that is trying to do us harm, and we conduct operations to deal with that adversary. Similar to any other military operation that is planned. And I believe, I've written a question mark down there, public and private companies, the same. I assume that there are operations in any smaller or large public and private company that is trying to get an advantage over their competitor. And the one that deals better with this than their opponent has an advantage. Again, the wrong computer. I don't. What do we have to help us with here? We have for a long time we've had a lot of information security regulations and instructions, and actually laws. This is written in Norwegian, but I'm sure every country has a similar set of best practices, laws, instructions about how to implement information security, or implement the CIA, the confidentiality, integrity, and availability. My question, though, is: yes, that's fine, and it's important. Let me not just underline that. It's not. I'm not saying it's not important, but does it work? I think that's a fair question. Some rather old examples, but still highly relevant. Target was attacked through a third-party contractor that needed access to the internal network because they were doing maintenance on the air conditioning. The attacker used this third-party company, got access to target, and the story is, it's probably higher than this now, but when I found this information, it was 70 million customers affected, 40 million cards exposed, cost of millions of dollars, people lost their job. So it's there are real consequences behind these attacks. And 2008, we had the first example where we got a targeted attack against offline systems. This was our troops in Afghanistan, and this is the first time that we see it. We always heard that, well, our network is not connected to the internet anyway, so why do we have to worry? And this was the first, at least I heard of, where we had a malware that actually bridged that gap. Used a USB stick. By the way, the name of this malware is Agent BTSet, if you want to look that up. Hides on a USB stick. When it hits an offline system, it copies itself on the offline system, starts looking for information, whatever it's looking for, collects it, waits for that USB stick to come back. The USB stick then asks, are you infected? And yes. Do you have information? Yes. Then it uploads the information to the USB stick, and the information sits there until it arrives at a computer with internet access, and then it's brought back to the server of the attacker. It's a slow channel, but it's still a channel that bridges the gap between offline and online systems. And note that this was done on a security-approved system. In 2011, we were sending fighter planes to Crete as a result of the Norwegian supporting the UN UN resolution of March that year. Right after that decision had been made, we saw the adversary prepare an attack, launch an attack, and exfiltrate the information. This is also on systems that follows these rules and regulations that I listed earlier. It also shows the correlation between political decisions and malware campaigns. So why do we have? We have such a long history with all these great information security regulations and rules and laws. So why does this happen? Well, probably many reasons, but what I like to point out is that these control systems for information security are often based on quality assurance, find deviations in products and reduce them, use statistics to predict events, so stochastic events, and based on compliance. You're compliant with a set of rules, so you're safe. I remember having lots of documentations in a bookshelf saying the system was secure, but yeah, it's just paper. But the threat landscape has changed. So that's one thing we're going to look at. This is important, but it's not enough. It might have been enough earlier, but it's not enough anymore. First of all, we have had a growth in the sophistication of people writing and producing malware. From early 80s, 90s, when this was a hobby and you could brag about this, to criminal activity arrived early. If you can make money, then you will find criminals there. Then this criminal activity was organized. You got terrorism and hacktivism. And today is fairly open that most states have intelligence organizations or military forces, state-sponsored groups that are active in exploiting the cyber domain in active or defensive manners. So this is no longer the amateur. We have professional adversaries. But also, most of the or a lot of the documentation that I showed earlier are good against random attacks. Think mean time before failure. That's what the background is. But now we have, due to these sophisticated adversaries, we have targeted attacks. And that has a huge impact. And I will try to show you how that will appear. I'm not sure if I'm... Okay, see if I can get that out there. This is a network with some connections. And now we're going to see how that network holds up if we randomly remove nodes. The number of nodes is counting up here. You see how many are removed. The nodes that are attacked and removed, it's bad for them, of course. It doesn't help them. But the point here is that the nodes that are left holds up. Even with 20 nodes gone, this network still functions. Of course, not for the ones removed, but for the ones that are still there. So 30 nodes, and it still holds up somehow, at least. So what happens if we then face an attacker that is a little bit more intelligent and removes these nodes more dedicated? You see here, 6, 7, we're not even to 10 nodes removed, and the network has fallen apart already. They go for the most vulnerable and the critical nodes first, and this network breaks apart like nothing. So that's also one of the reasons why we need to think on other solutions than just information security in the classical sense. And now, how do I start the presentation again? There we go. So what does all this boil down to? For me, it has to do with, it boils down to risk management, as with all operative planning. You need to manage the risk, you need to determine, and you need to handle that risk. One way of doing that we do is we call it operation security assessment. I forgot to translate the top line there, I see. OPSEC. I know this is similar to one of the ISO standards. You need to find out what are your critical assets. What do you need to protect? You need to find out what the threat is. You need to find out where you're vulnerable. And then it's the overlap of those. So who has the means and the capabilities of exploiting some of your vulnerabilities to get access to critical assets? That will determine your risk. And then you can recommend risk-reducing measures. This is, in my opinion, in the core of what small and large businesses, private, public, or military should, how the leadership should think. That means for me that malware analysis and analyzing any incident should feed this process, so that so that our leaders are able to make the best possible decision. Give you one example of how we're thinking. In the military, our job is to defend the freedom of operations. So make sure that our forces, wherever they are able to do their job as best as they can. They will have limitations. That's a given. But we need to give them the advantage and the freedom as best as we can. And I think that applies for companies too. If you're going to be successful in the market, then you need to be able to defend that that you can run your business as freely and as competitive as possible. Three things that we focus on then. Build situation awareness. You need to know what's going on. And you do that through cyber surveillance. You need to pay attention to your network and see what's going on with logs, with sensors. But you also, equally important, need to get in reports and indicators. A lot of times the a case starts with an observant user that tries to open a document. That document behaves weird or crashes, and that user picks up the phone and calls somebody, and that's how it starts. So don't forget that. Then we can shape the cyber landscape, a fancy word for saying we can build our networks to make it easy for ourselves and difficult for our adversary. That goes where do we place the sensors and the equipment, and how do we, there's a term that I'm going to touch on a little bit later, but it's called defendable infrastructure. Back when we dealt with the information security laws and regulations, there was an impression that we can build secure systems. I hope nobody still walks around and claims that. I don't think it's possible, but what we can do is we can build defendable systems or defendable infrastructure that makes it possible to detect and mitigate attacks. And finally, at the bottom one is cyber control. That is, what do we do when we detect somebody, and how do we use our resources to get an advantage and get the freedom, defend the freedom of operations. Deceive, delay, divert, deny are just examples. There are many other tools in that box. In order to facilitate that way of thinking, I'm going to introduce a topic called cyber kill chain. This was came from the late 90s, U.S. Air Force targeting process, find, fix, target, track, target, engage, and assess. But then in 2010, Lockheed Martin, in a white paper listed here by Hutchins and others, tried to use this kill chain in a cyber setting. And just to give you, I'm not going to do this often, but this, when I tell you that we're going to write reports on malware, I'm not sure if it works. I think it does, but I'm going to encourage you and push you towards writing the malware findings in a kill chain setting. Trying to explain, because I'm going to talk through the kill chain in a minute, and it's not possible to do that in a good way without help from malware analysts. So find that paper and read it. I will I'll see if I can post it on Blackboard as well. So what is cyber kill chain? Well, if it's a series of actions necessary to obtain the desired effect on a target. For us, that reads, how do I get my malware to the target, and how do I get it to do what I want? This is not the only way. There are many other ways of describing the steps necessary to do harm on a computer. But the kill chain by Lockheed Martin is frequently used by security operation centers. Many places they come and they say, what do you use? Oh, well, we use kill chain. So let's quickly go through the seven steps. Reconnaissance. Find out the information about your target. Weaponization, build the malware. Deliver the malware. The malware needs to exploit something, a vulnerability in your system. Then it needs to install itself, maybe create persistent. Then it usually needs to call home to get instructions or to send files somewhere or get updates or be told what to do. That's the command and control channel, C2. And then finally, you did this for some reason. You wanted to achieve something on this computer or the system. And that's step number 7, action on objectives. Malware analysis is definitely a big part of the later steps here. The earlier steps is probably easier answered with the network IDSs, firewalls, network information. But that is something that we together will find out through this course. And now we have a question. Say again? The question was, is the C2 step still relevant in today's situation? And I would say very much yes. I guess it depends on how you define the C2 step. But what we see is a lot of malware today. They just try to upload small code, then that contacts back to get more code. So you have a small payload in the beginning, and then you upload something else. And if you call that a command and control channel, then it's highly relevant. And then you have malware that is has tons of functionality that you actually need a command line in or instructions in to tell it what to do. Do you want it to listen to the microphone? Do you want it to take pictures? Do you want it to find a certain file? So interaction with the malware is done over a command and control channel. So in that respect, yes, very much so. So what do we use this for? Well, we use it to build situation awareness or establish consequent and intent. Let's say that we detect a computer that communicates out towards an IP address it's not supposed to. We find a C2 channel, and here we go, timing. I don't know. Then we analyze, how did it get there? And then we use information from these steps to maybe learn and detect. Maybe we can see, okay, this is how they deliver the malware. And then we're able to detect in that step the next time on a different computer on network. Then we also need to analyze, well, how did they get to the delivery phase? But we also need to synthesize and see what would have happened if they were successful. And all along the road here, we build up a library of information with many cases, and we see patterns. And that's how we arrive to campaign analysis. You can say something about capabilities, doctrines, objectives, limitations, and intent. And this kind of thinking could have been behind the Sophocy campaign that EUCERT was that I will show from EUCERT earlier. This is a powerful tool to build analysis like this. Not the only way, but in my opinion, a good way. I'll step through each step really, each of these 7 steps really quickly. Reconnaissance, how do they find you? Well, it can be targeted or random. Random first, it doesn't matter who they get. They just want a number of infected computers to make money. Targeted, then you are interesting for some reason. And they look for you in by doing social engineering, making friends, talking to you on conferences, you name it, traditional espionage, search the web, what can we find, membership conferences, and then finally, what most technical people think about when they hear reconnaissance is the network scans, what ports are open, what services are available. But that's just one of many reconnaissance tools. Okay, they found me, so what? They have to deliver malware to your computer. And in the weaponization part down here, they build a malware that we're going to analyze later in this this class. But how do they deliver it? Well, you have some, the top three delivery methods are listed here. Email, web, and removable memory. Email, phishing, spear phishing. You have to click. That is, I think user interaction is still, let's say, 95% accurate. I think there are examples where that's not accurate, but for the most part, you have to click on a link or attachment. Web, you are redirected to a place where you didn't want to go. USB, SD cards, phones, but you have to connect this. And then you have apps. Free apps, well, you get commercial, but sometimes you get more. And then there's one topic that is too big for this class, but supply chain security. Do you know where this product is coming from? What's been added to the hardware and software before you bought it? That's interesting, but large topic. Just a couple of examples. Sorry that they're in Norwegian. It's just an example of spear phishing. What you do is you look for the language. You hold over the links to see, does the link look suspicious? Does it look like it comes from the bank, or does it just look similar? They're getting better at this, so it's harder and harder to detect. I mentioned a case where we sent fighter planes to Crete, and there was a campaign. That campaign started with a spear phishing. There was an article in Aftenposten, and there was in the Integrering in Mangfoldsdirektorat. I'm sorry, I have no idea how to translate that. But one of the political the departments of the government was waiting for a yearly report. So it made sense that that yearly report was about to be sent out. That yearly report was sent out, and it was sent by somebody that actually works there. That's so no fake names. They were actually believable. But the attachment, the yearly report, had something extra. I mentioned waterhole techniques. Again, back to EUCERT and SOFACY. SOFACY is known for masquerading and taking addresses that are close to the organization that they are trying to mimic. So these are useful techniques. For those that are interested in network detection, this is what it looks like. You requested a website. This is manufactured data, so that's why it doesn't make sense. But you request one, but you see that the traffic is forwarded to a different site, a landing site. So I clicked, and there is no regret button. And this happens to professionals too. Even though we know we shouldn't, and sometimes we do. What happens when you click is that the malware have to exploit a vulnerability. And that, what's really sad is that often these vulnerabilities are often known vulnerabilities with an available patch. So the solution was there. You just were too lazy to patch your system, and that's why you got attacked. Examples of this: Black Hole Exploit Kit. Some years since I looked into that kit now, but back then you could pay money and say, I have a piece of malware, I want that malware installed, or I want you to try to install it on 100,000 computers. And they would say, yes, for so much money, we will try this for you. They would create either spear phishing mails or waterhole and try different computers, and that was based on known vulnerabilities. So if you patch, you will be fairly secure against that. Configure, still a problem. The fix has been there a long time, at least for the older attacks. Then you, of course, have zero-day vulnerabilities like the Heartbleed and things that you didn't know about that shows up. But it's amazingly how many attacks actually goes towards known vulnerabilities. This is expensive. And once you use it once and it's you spent it. This is another example. And when you went to this page, you were redirected and you get something extra. In this case, you get a flash and an executable file. These are the types that we will look at later and see what's going on. So, am I infected? By the way, I see the time is running out. We have 4 minutes and I have five slides. I think I'm going to time in just about on time. Am I affected? Sad to say, it's hard to tell, even for people that work in this field. When I started in this field, I said, okay, now I'm working with information security, cyber defense. At least my computer should be secure and clean. I lived in that illusion for a couple of weeks until I talked to all the experts and they said, no, there's no way to guarantee that. So I was a little disappointed, but that's the way it is. But you can get indicators, of course. But if a backdoor and a remote access tool, so a tool that you can control from the outside, is installed, the adversary has full control. I forget the exact number, but I think the average time for detecting an infection today is months rather than weeks, if not months and years. I've heard seven or eight months before you detect an infection on average. Not sure how they calculate that, but it's difficult to detect. So what do you do? If you suspect something, always report. Somebody, the SOC or the CSOC, might see a bigger picture that you don't see. A small case in Norway might fit into the picture of that's something that Europol is looking at, maybe. And then it's at least in the military, we like to get to a place where we can choose to observe or choose to mitigate. I find that important, because if you have a overeager maintenance IT guy that just fixes things right away, you lost the chance to monitor the malware and see what else you could find out. That could be valuable sometimes. It could be really dangerous other times. But it's nice to have the option. All right, just again, from a network side, what can we see? Well, we see lots of traffic here, probably related to uploading flash and the executable. These periodic traffic here is beaconing traffic. So this will be the malware asking the server, hey, do you have anything for me? Do you have anything for me? Anything new? Anything new? And these red tops here is probably command spec saying, yes, I do. Please look for this type of file, or please upload this. Do this. And then also we can also see related to that top picture, you also see that there are a large amount of data going out around those manual commands there, probably exfiltration of data. Last slide before I round off. If you really want to defend your network, you have to know your network. Rob Joyce, NSA. First of all, is the stream still going? Then I hurry up. I'm not going to talk much about it. It's not that relevant for us, but from no security to acceptable, there is always a residual risk. You build your network by some principled defendable infrastructure. Then you have a surveillance team and a computer network defense team on top, a SOC, CSOC. Then you can increase this level to a much higher level. I call this defensive cyber operations, but it's the combination of the traditional information security thinking combined with defendable infrastructure and a new computer network defense that gives us the new defense. And again, just to round it off, it's all about preserving this number for the society and minimizing this. I forgot how long I set the recording for. I guess I should set it for a couple of minutes over, but it's still going. All right. Let me know if it stops. That is what I have. I don't know if that was useful or not, but I am hoping that will give you some background from where I'm coming from and what I'm looking for. We are going to look at the level much lower than this, analyzing executable code. But I will push you and encourage you to try to relate that deep analysis up towards this level. And we'll see how I haven't done that before, at least not in the classroom. So we'll see how that goes. But that's my intent, to push you a little bit up and not only to get fixed on bits and bytes, even though there's going to be enough of bits and bytes in this class. So, all right, then we'll take a short break. I'll be available on Blackboard to answer questions if anybody has questions related to installing their computer as described on Blackboard. If you don't have any questions, if everything's fine, then you're home free. Work twice as hard next week. And then I'll see you again next Monday, 8:15. Give me feedback if this worked or didn't work today. All right. Thank you.